Yosef not only interprets the dreams, but he decides to give the Pharaoh a lot of advice. He says, here how you should be a good Pharaoh. This is what you got to do. You know, appoint somebody who has wisdom and insight and sapience and wherewithal. And this person is going to set things up. The obvious question is, why is Yosef giving advice? That's not what the Pharaoh asked for. He just said, interpret my dream. But the point is, that is the interpretation of the dream. The interpretation of the dream is Memayr Ho'elikim La'asayse. God is doing this. This is coming. And you need to act. And that is the only thing that fully explains how and why the Pharaoh dreamt what he dreamt. So the response on the Pharaoh's part in the third reading is ecstatic. He says, we're never going to find anybody wiser. This is the man. No question about it. And Pharaoh says to Joseph, I have placed you over the land of Egypt. Take a look in verse 42. The Pharaoh begins the process. Vayosar parei estabate me'al yodei. The Pharaoh takes his ring off his hand. Vayiten oisa al yad Yosef. He himself places it upon the hand of Joseph. Vayalbesh oisei bigdei sheish. He dresses him in linen clothing. Vayosim revid hazov al tzavare. He places the chain of office around his neck. Verse 42. Let's take a look at Rashi. Vayosar pare es tabate. The Pharaoh took his ring off. So Rashi says, Nesinas tabas hamelech, the giving of the ring of the king, he ois is a sign, lemi shenoisnalei. So it's a sign for the one that the king gives it to. Now what's it a sign of? It's a sign, lihiyais sheni loy ligdula, that he should be viceroy, second to him alone. Rashi doesn't go into the details of what exactly the ring does or doesn't signify, but he says you should know that that's the meaning of the ring. When it says the Pharaoh took off the ring, he ringed Yosef, that's the meaning of ringing him. So for example, over the ages, ringing people have had many different connotations. Even in today's modern day and age, when an engineer graduates, he has to be ringed by another engineer. And the engineers wear a special engineering ring. So there is this idea of ringing somebody, and the ringing done in a certain way, and in that way, it's an act of empowerment. The Ramban says this is very practical. He says, Tabas HaMelech was the signet ring. The signet ring was in times of antiquity, when there would be a royal decree, the king would make an impression with his ring into the clay, and that would make something go live. That's the equivalent of the president signing something into law. And so the signet ring was essentially indicative that this person was, in the Ramban's words, Nagid. He was leader, ruler, or Mitzava, B'chol Malchus. He would be the one to instruct the entire kingdom. Why? Because now he has the signet ring with which he can make the official seal. So practically speaking, whatever he decides will go into law will actually become law because he has the wherewithal, the ability to sign things into law. Of course, this brings to mind the story of Purim, where Ahasuerus takes off his ring and he gives it to Haman. And now Haman can do as he pleases. Of course, this is a positive one. So that's the story with the ring. Big day sheish, what's up with the linen clothes? Rashi says, Dvar chashivas hu b'mitzrayim. This was something very prominent in Egypt. I suppose this is the Egyptian ermine. This is talking about a kind of fabric, a textile, which is very unique, very special. And in Egypt, if you wore linen, you were like the upper cut. That put you in the realm of nobility. Revid, the chain of office. What does this mean? So Rashi first says, this means anak. This is a chain that goes around one's neck. Because it's comprised of individual rings, that's why it's called revid. It's because it's made of many pieces. Now, if you never saw a picture of the ancient Egyptian kings, you don't really understand what this means. So yeah, sure, every chain is made of many links. But if you've seen pictures of the ancient kings, with that kind of design that goes across the chest, that's made up of individual pieces. That's the chain of office we're talking about. That's exactly what we refer to when we say chain of office, that Yosef wore this very, very fancy, kind of an ornament. It's not like a ring as you think of it today, as like little rings. It's not a little chain. This was a heavy metal thing made up of individual plates. V'chein, similarly, we find in the scripture, in the book of Mishlei, we find marvadim rovadati arsi. And the intimation is, ratzafti arsi mirtzofes, that the beds were, so to speak, set up together. Now, when you think of rings in the European sense, that doesn't really make sense. It doesn't. The imagery Rashi is invoking does not bring to mind the imagery that he's cross-referencing. But when you think of those Egyptian pictures, right, with around the neck with those pieces, that's exactly what it is. It covers the whole neck. It's all, so to speak, one piece next to the other. And Rashi says, Bolshen HaMishnah, in the language of the Mishnah, it's Mukof Reivdin Shal Oven. There was rows of stone, one after the other. And this is talking about the area of the Beis HaMikid, where the Kohanim used to sleep, and they would have this indented stone. So there'd be like stone shelves, but the stones would be one on top of the other. And that would be like a wall that was staggered stone. And then it says like, Al-Revid HaRevi Sheba Azara, that they used to place one of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash on the fourth stone, or the fourth step of the Azara, the Ritzpa, and this was something that was entirely covered with stone, a flagstone. So the covering, this is the chain of office that we're referring to over here. So now it just makes sense. I wonder if Rashi ever saw a picture of it or even understood it in the visual sense, as we do today, because, you know, these things have just come out of the ground, out of the mummies. At any rate, the next thing the Pharaoh does is Vayarke Vesei B'merkeves HaMishnah. He has him mounted or riding in Air Force 2, in the secondary chariot, Ashaloi, which he had. By Yikru Lefonov, and they proclaim before him, Avreich! He's an Avreich. V'nosan Oisoi, I'll call Eretz Mitzrayim. Thus, he was placed over all of Egypt. Okay, what does this mean? B'merkeves HaMishnah, Rashi says, this is a Merkava, is a chariot or a vehicle, Hashniel Merkavtai, which is second only to the royal chariot or transportation mechanism that the king used. Hamahaleches Eitzel Shalai, the one that goes along with the pharaohs. So Merkavas HaMishnah literally means the secondary chariot. And Rashbam suggests that it's not actually a chariot, but rather an animal. He said there was the steed of the king, and then there was the viceroy steed, and he got to mount that steed. Ramban and Radak maintained that it was a very well-known vehicle, a vehicle that was known to be reserved only for the second in command, which is why I use the terminology of Air Force 2. Air Force 1, the president rides. Air Force 2, the vice president rides. Our prime minister has no plane. It's just the way it is. They commandeer like some military jet when they need something. Vayikru lefonav Avreich. They proclaimed Avreich. What in heaven does Avreich mean? What were they proclaiming Avreich for? So Rashi says, if you take a look in the Targum, Kitagumi Unkelus renders it Dein Abba Lemalka. This is like the father for the king, meaning the one who is responsible. A father or a mother are responsible for the household. This is the father figure of the monarchy. And Rashi says, how does that become word Avreich? Well, Av we know means a father, but he says Reich, Belshen Arami, the word Reich in Aramit, according to another opinion in Roman language, is Melech. And in Germany, what do they call it? A Reich. Same terminology, same language. So we have this expression in the Gemara in Perek HaShutfin, in Mesechus Bava Basra, in the beginning. It says, Loi Reka V'Loi Bar Reka. I'm not a king, I'm not the son of a king. And that's what Unkelus means when he says, Dein Abba L'Malka. Dein Abba L'Malka means, Av Reich, father for the king. But this is like a little far-fetched, that Av Reich means father for the king, because it doesn't sound like a conjunctive word. What does the word itself mean? Therefore, Rashi adds words of Agada. He says, Dorash Rabbi Yehuda expounded on this word. And he said, Avreich ze Yosef. Avreich is not a general terminology. It's not a word which is used to describe the second in command, or the person who's going to be the CEO of the company, the one who's going to be responsible for the king's affairs, the chief of staff, if you will. No, it's not what it means. And how do we know that? Because besides Yosef, this word is never used again. And if the word actually means that, how come the word isn't used? All the examples that he brings here are connected to Reich, not to Av. Av is self-understood. Mm-hmm. The word Av Reich itself shows up nowhere. So that's a problem. So Rashi can't just leave it as Av Reich, that, yeah, that's what Av Reich means, because this is a word that never shows up anywhere else. And therefore, we have Rabbi Yehuda, who is expounding and saying, you're right. Av Reich does mean Av and Reich, but it's never used for anybody else. It's only for Yosef that this terminology is used. And that's because who Av b'chochma, he is like a father in wisdom, meaning experienced, but Rach b'shonim, he's very tender in years. He was only 30 years old. He's 30 years old. He's becoming the mightiest, second most powerful man in the world. It's a very young person. Av Reich. So incidentally, this is what a lot of times people who study in a koil, they're called an avrich. Why? Because they study a lot of Torah, supposedly. So they're supposedly very wise, but they're very young in years. So somebody later graduates, moves on, then he's called a rav, a rabbi, whatever. But somebody who's not yet a rabbi, but nonetheless learned in Torah, so we call him an avrich, which means av b'chachma and reich b'shanim. Omer let Rabbi Yosi ben Durmaskis, Rabbi Yosi of Damascus said, he says, oy vey, how long are you going to play this game and twist and turn the psukim to fit your thing? That's not what it means. Ein avrech loshem berkayim. The word avrech comes from kneeling. It means knees. Sha'akol nechnosam v'yetzin tachas yodeh. You kneel. The person you kneel before is the person everybody is subservient to. It's a word that describes subservience. It's not a special word describing Yosef's unique conditions, being so wise yet young. Like it says, the Pharaoh said, I will place you over the land of Egypt. So if the Pharaoh says, I place you over the land of Egypt, then the idea of I place you over the land of Egypt represents what? That everybody kneels before him. So this is the kneeling. That's what we're talking about here. The day of kneeling. Everybody kneels. This is the simple pshat, as Rashi explains it. In the other Mefarshim, there's a lot of discussion of this business of Avrech. For example, the Tur says that the word Avrech is also a conjunction of the word Bracha. And he says, everybody blesses the king, so to speak. In the Sefarno, we have this idea of both like Havrech, he says, which is like a command. People kneeled and they would cry before him, cry out before him. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that Avrech represents the idea of two words of Av and Odin, because here was a person who went from nowhere, a meteoric rise. He was a slave, he was a jailbird, and now he went through, smashed all the glass ceilings. That's why it's called Avrech, two fancy words to describe his greatness. Instead of just Rech, we called him Avrech. So we have this, the middle interpretation in Rashi, which is about kneeling, right? So let's take a look now in the Biur Chumash quickly before we go on to our davening this morning on page Reish Lamed Ches. The Rebbe notes the following. Tzorach Biur. From the words that we just read, this business of Avrech being L'shem Birkayim, being a permutation of knees and kneeling, that everybody would kneel, and this was a sign of Yosef's supremacy, his sovereignty. So with regard to Yosef's brothers, though, what does it say? What did the people do? When the brothers came, it says, they bowed low. Their faces were literally in the ground. Which this, as explained by Rashi, they spread themselves flat on their faces, literally fell on their faces. And Rashi there says, whenever the Torah uses the terminology, it means pishut yadayim v'raglayim. It means flat out. Not kneeling, but flat out. So kneeling is a sign of subservience. Falling on your face is a much more serious sign of commitment and subjugation. So from that pasuk, and this is a pasuk in the same parsha, it's mashma, it seems, that the custom was not to kneel before Joseph, but rather to prostrate oneself before Joseph. As one would prostrate themselves before a very king. Well, in that case, how could we appreciate this language of Avreich, which is Lashon Birkayim? And here, Rabbi Yosi ben Damascus says, Admos Atama Aves, for how long are you going to twist the words of the Pasuk? It's straightforward. He's the person everybody kneels before. In fact, he's not the person everybody kneels before. He's the person everybody prostrates themselves before. And here you're suggesting that the terminology Avreich is L'Shem Birkayim. So the Rebbe says the truth is very simple. Yosef Achin L'Hayu Melech L'Chol Dover. He was not actually the king. Why wasn't he the king? Because a king is not in power by dint or virtue of somebody else granting him power. That's not a king. L'Yismana L'Melech B'Schus Atzmei. He didn't come to the monarchy with his own virtue. Elai de pare. And like it says, V'nosoin oisai. The Pharaoh is the one who placed him. And he said, Rakakisi egdom emeka. The throne will tower above you. But that's all. But the throne did tower above him. V'lachain lohayim mishtachim lefanav. Therefore, they didn't prostrate themselves and bow before Yosef k'may lefnei melech. So why did Yosef's brothers do it? A bunch of Yidden show up in Mitzrayim. They have no idea of what you're supposed to do in front of an Egyptian king. Everybody knows. And the viceroy, you kneel. And the pharaoh, you bow. These guys are terrified. They know a bunch of Yidden. They just came to get some food. All of a sudden, they're in this big fancy throne room. This monster is screaming at them. They don't know what to do. They fell on their faces. It's not a question. Yosef's brothers did something. They didn't know what else to do. Simple. That's why they bowed low on their face. But now the Rebbe does something unbelievable. He says, okay, that's on a pshat level, it's not hard to understand. But really and truly, there's something much more profound and deeper going on beneath the surface. Malchus Yosef hu semel malchus shamayim. Yosef's monarchy ultimately is symbolic of the reign of heaven. His batlus b'fnei Yosef, the sense of humility before Yosef, who's hatzadik, humbling oneself before the tzadik, this is kamoya ki his batlus b'fnei machusei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is like the famous line that Yosef sends to Yankiv. He says, "Samani alekim la'adna mitzrayim." I place God as the master over Egypt. So one way of interpreting is, "Samani alekim." I place God, not God placed me. I place God as the master. Yosef tried to bring morality to the country. He tried to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu part of the fabric of Egyptian society. In other words, his batlusim shal anshe mitzrayim b'fnei Yosef. When the people were nullified, when the people were subservient to Yosef, ultimately Yosef tried to bring them into a higher kind of spiritual consciousness, an awareness of the Creator. Now, the Egyptians, they couldn't really be brought along so far. How far could they go? They could kneel, but that's all. They're ready to kneel before Yosef representing the Malchus of Shemayim. But the brothers of Yosef, subconsciously and intuitively understood when they stood before Yosef, that he's Yosef HaTzadik, they were capable of a much higher level of bittul, and therefore they didn't only kneel. In fact, they prostrated themselves. So the pshat has a beautiful mystical teaching behind it, explaining to us the importance of bittul, of renouncing one's self-importance and bowing before the tzadik, which ultimately represents the idea of being subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This we shall conclude for today. Mm-hmm. Yes.